Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Holy smokes, indeed. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something right now. There are a bunch of teams right now that are just looking for a few inches. There are nine 0-2 teams right now in the NFL. Welcome into another Red Zone Blitz, Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz program, our second for this second season that we've been on the air. Frat House, Mike coming to you here this evening. And, yeah, we're going to take a look at the week that was as we get ready for the week that will be coming in here tomorrow night, Thursday Night Football coming tomorrow night. And so that gives us Wednesday to just sit back now and kind of purvey the landscape of what the NFL looks like right now. And for God's sake, it's upside down. No joke. As I just pointed out, 9-0-2 teams. I think I heard, I believe it was Sal Palantonio who said yesterday that that hasn't happened in the NFL in decades. That we would start the season with that many 0-2 teams, six of them right now in the NFC. So looking for inches? Yeah, there's a bunch of teams looking for inches. There's a bunch of teams just looking to get a win on the board. And for some of those teams, well, we're going to be taking a look at that New Orleans Saints team. Yeah, they're 0-2. You know, you just got to wonder, when do the panic buttons start getting pushed?
Obviously, we've got to do a better job.
He's not saying that. Not yet, anyhow. But we're going to be taking a look a little bit as well at the Cleveland Browns. How about there? There was a surprise this past weekend. The Washington Redskins, well, they upset the St. Louis Rams. The Philadelphia Eagles right now are one of those 0-2 teams. What's going on there? A lot of panic right now in the city of brotherly love. And it doesn't
Obviously
have anything.
We've got to do a better job.
yeah, there we go again. And it doesn't have any. There's panic in the city of brotherly love, and it doesn't have anything to do with road closures as a result of the Pope visit. That'll be coming later on. The panic will be coming on that one in a couple of days. The New York Jets, the Indianapolis Colts are 0-2. What in the world? I'm telling you, the entire world of the NFL is turned upside down. We're going to get talking about that. We're going to get into, a couple other issues and stories that are going on around the NFL. Matt Castle just got traded from Buffalo to the Dallas Cowboys yesterday. Ryan Fitzpatrick named as the starter up in the Jets, up at the Jets for the rest of the season. So many other things that we will try to get into. Plus, we want to take all of your calls out there, 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here, 347-826-9964. Otherwise, if you're listening on a computer, hit that Skype button. It'll put you through to us loud and clear. Or you can jump in the chat room, leave us a message there, or hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Very shortly here, I will be putting up our, as we've been doing, I'll be putting up our Frat House Sports Twitter poll question here in a couple of moments. Normally, I would have Brandon here with me. Brandon's on a late summer vacation. I guess it's now officially the first day of fall. And joining me, got Uncle Mark. Uncle Mark, thanks for joining me here tonight on the Red Zone Blitz.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nice to be here, Frat House Mike. There's a lot to talk about, as you mentioned. Quarterbacks are not the only issue when we talk about injuries. My goodness, there's injuries league-wide. And there's a lot of fans out there because, as he said, holy smokes, how many 0-2 teams there are. And when you look at them and start to break down where they were, many of these teams were postseason, champion rivals. Wow. Holy smokes.
Yeah. Or projected to be there. Could it get much worse for the Philadelphia Eagles? Late word this afternoon, DeMarco Murray went out with a hamstring, has an MRI scheduled for it. Normally, they don't schedule MRIs on a hamstring unless it's a tear.
Yep.
Holy smokes, we could lose DeMarco Murray here in Philadelphia. So, like I said, a lot of panic right now in the city of brotherly love. We'll get into a little bit of that. Hopefully as well, we're going to be joined in here, I believe, as well, at some point. Hopefully that's going to happen by Nick Swartz. I know Nick's doing a little bit of coaching. Not football coaching. He's doing
really?
A bit of, believe it or not, fall baseball coaching. So hopefully we'll be getting him in here as well.
Yep.
But let's jump it off, because we only have an hour and a half here. And folks, if there's anything you want to talk about your team, maybe your team's not on the agenda, don't sweat it. That's okay. We're here to talk football. That's it.
We'll talk
NFL football. Absolutely. We're going to talk NFL football. And if you want to bring a team that's not on the agenda, don't sweat it. We'd be more than happy to do it. 347-826-9964. I want to start off with the first one, though, and that's the I want to start off with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints. Now, we saw a little bit of this game on Sunday here at Frat House Sports. We get around and we get the chance to see a little bit just about of every single game here at Frat House Sports. We don't sit and watch every single game, obviously, in their entirety, but we get around. Trust me, right here, Uncle Mark can tell you, we get around and we get a feel, a little bit of a flavor, a little bit of a taste of every single game that is going on at one point or another in the NFL, particularly on a football Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so great right now, Frat House Mike, because we aren't in bye weeks yet. So we're getting a full, we're getting the whole slate. You're getting 16 games over the course of the weekend. You bookend those with Thursday, the one to open, and Monday, the one to close. But boy, that Sunday is just a veritable smorgasbord, and it's been delightful.
And I think the bye weeks actually are going to start kicking in, I believe, by next week, by week four.
Yeah.
Yep. So this will be the last weekend where we get the full slate of 14 on Sunday, at least for a little while, anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
But here we go. Tampa Bay Buccaneers beat the New Orleans Saints on the road. They were in the Saints' house, and they beat them by 7 points. Now, I guess what I came away from with this one a little bit surprised at was, number one, we talked about it a little bit in last week's program, and that was the matchup between Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston in week one. How Mariota was just looking so, so dominant, and Winston just really didn't look very good at all. But juxtapose that to a New Orleans team that now is home. A New Orleans team that many had hyped as being, this was going to be a resurgent New Orleans team. They were going to dominate the NFC South. I know there's a lot of hype out there about the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta Falcons, in fact, were one of the biggest movers, I believe, on the power rankings this week. In fact, they were over at USA Today. They jumped all the way up to 9th from 20th. So, But nonetheless, it was going to come down to the Saints, and it was going to come down to, I guess, depending on what your premonition was, the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints still don't look to me like they've got it going on. Drew Brees wasn't there. 24 of 38, 255, one touchdown, one interception. All right, not horrible numbers. Jameis Winston, on the other hand, certainly did have a much better game, in my opinion, than what we saw in week one. And I think this was a better opponent for him in some respects. Because I think the Titans have a lot of work to do. So he actually, in my opinion, I think went up against what I kind of thought was going to be a stronger opponent in the New Orleans Saints than he had in week one. So I guess some people could say throw out the window, throw his results out from week one out the window, because that was first game jitters. 14 of 21, 207 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions, and a 114.6 QB rating. What did you take away from this game, aside from the fact New Orleans now really puts themselves behind the eight ball?
Well, I guess what jumps out first, obviously, they don't have a ground game, Frat House. Mike, this being New Orleans I'm referring to, when you look at that and you take that element away from the attack, that essentially makes it a very one-dimensional team. And that was really the same case a year ago. Juxtapose that then with Tampa Bay. Not only did Winston have a rebound week, coming back successfully versus a week one, but you look at Doug Martin and Charlie Sims, and they were effective in that change of pace and success on the ground. Doug Martin put together a nice long 20-yard run. Sims put together a nice 12-yard long run. And the numbers there kind of helped in the total production of Tampa Bay, and it kept the Saints, what would you say, kept them honest. The other thing, I guess, that strikes me is that, Rob Ryan, as a defensive coordinator, he survived there. There was definitely some jettisoning of, the different coordinators and coaches out of the Saints after last year. They decided to do some housekeeping and house cleaning, but he wound up keeping his position. And I'm not so sure right now, Ryan's got to be feeling sort of like he's on a pretty hot seat.
It's interesting because, and I might agree with you that, and that's been one of the complaints about the New Orleans Saints, even going back to last season, is that they don't have, or they didn't have, let's put it this way, they don't have a consistent ground game. Their ground game wasn't horrible this past week. You got Ingram up there getting 53 yards. Kyrie Robinson threw in for 48, nicely enough, and did okay for me from a fantasy standpoint. Well, what I'm finding here, Uncle Mark, is that while Drew Brees right now is ranked number 5 in the league, quarterback-wise, surprisingly, but not surprisingly, because if you go even back to last year's stats, Drew Brees had very, very good league numbers across the league. He was ranked very, very high on a very, very, I don't want to say a bad team, but a team that didn't perform.
Right.
You look at what Brees did with the receiving. You know what I think the difference is? You don't see what Drew Brees had, the weapons that Drew Brees had, I guess, from 3-4 years ago, those explosive-type wideouts.
Right.
Well, the tight end doesn't have. Colston picked up 69 yards in the air. Brandon Cook, 62 yards in the air. Willie Snead, who? 44 yards
right.
in the air.
Yeah, right.
Brandon
yeah.
Coleman, 33 yards in the air. Benjamin Watson, 12. I mean, all right, he's spreading it around. He's getting the receivers. He's finding them. He's spotting them. Good for Drew Brees. Great.
Right.
That shows a mature quarterback. But nothing really that knocks your socks off here. Nothing. And really, it was the aerial game, I think, that came up a little bit short, in my opinion.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree.
Plus,
I would agree.
You got to remember, there are a lot of turnovers in this game. A lot
of
turnovers in this
game. I was going to say the same. Drew Brees coughed it up twice. He recovered one of them. Ingram lost a fumble. Murphy dropped one. Snead dropped one. More turnovers, and turnovers are going to effectively, shoot down any offensive thrust. And that seemed to be the case, and it was surprising at home in the Dome. They could not get a sustained drive. And just going back to even the rushing game, Ingram, okay, granted, he did have 53 yards on the ground, but he had one long run of 11. When you take that 11 out, now you're talking 42 yards on 15 attempts. And now you start to see what the yards per average attempt really are. And that's where I think it was clearly obvious that they were running for one and two hard yards and quite often running for losses. Brandon mm-hmm. Cooks ultimately was minus yards. Drew Brees himself took off and scrambled more than once. But in any costly way, he wound up being essentially a minus rusher himself. So it's a mess right now, unfortunately, there in New Orleans. And, the Falcons and the Panthers, it's early, and they are both sitting at 2-0. But looking at it, just the feel of that NFC South, I don't have a great deal more confidence early on with that division than I did a year ago. That's my early take on it.
Yeah, I guess the jury's out yet on the Atlanta Falcons and whether, in fact, they're really going to have that rebound year that so many had kind of indicated might be the possibility. Let me do this. Let me get in our other co-host for this evening, and that's Nick Swartz. Nick, I appreciate you jumping in here with us on the Red Zone Blitz tonight. Thanks very much.
Hey, thanks for having me. I apologize.
Yeah,
Mike,
good.
I was listening to you guys. That was good stuff. I enjoyed it.
Well, we Wednesday nights we go X's and O's. That's what we do here on Wednesday nights. We take a look at the week that was, and we just kind of break it down statistically, game by game. Not all of them, but we pick out a few of them. We were just talking a little bit about the large number of 0-2 teams, Nick. I think it was Sal Palantonio that mentioned yesterday that this is the first time that the NFL has opened with this many 0-2 teams in decades. Six of them are in the NFC. One of those we were just talking about, the New Orleans Saints. What do you make of the number of 0-2 teams in the league opening up the season? What do you make of the New Orleans Saints?
I'm surprised by the teams that are 0-2. There's some going into the season. The majority of the teams that are 0-2, you expected to be playoff caliber teams. Everything that you guys were talking about with the Saints, I agree. Drew Brees doesn't have the weapons. One of the things about Brees is he's a shorter quarterback, and so he needs that protection because they don't rule him out that much. He is a dropback quarterback, even though he's a shorter guy. He doesn't have that big tall receiver, and I think that's one of the reasons why Brandon Cooks isn't elevate into the level so many expected. It's because he's not a big receiver like a Marquise Colston, like a Graham, where Brees can see them, as he makes his checkdowns. These receivers on the team are smaller, and he's having issues. If you ever notice when Drew Brees is even at his best, he's standing on his tiptoes. On his tiptoes, and that's how he passes. Well, look at this receiving core. It's Marquise Colston, and no one else is really stepping up, and it's really the size. The one guy, you had mentioned his name, Coleman. He was supposed to be the Marquise Colston, the new Marquise Colston, in a sense, because he's a bigger-bodied receiver. The problem is he doesn't have the speed to separate, which is another reason that Drew Brees is having problems. The receivers aren't getting separation, and being a smaller quarterback, he needs that speed, and he needs that length from his receivers. You're not getting it. New Orleans is in trouble.
Wouldn't it make sense to put Brees back in the shotgun more often? And I don't see it that often. I think you make a very valid observation, Nick. And to me, I'm not saying it's the only solution, but I'm saying the quick fix would be change the scheme, go with the quick count, go with the quick count, quick snap, and put him back there in the shotgun where it's going to give him more time to be able to see the play develop, the plays develop on the field. Wouldn't that make sense?
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Sean Payton reminds me a lot of Chip Kelly, but he's an older, you know, more experienced coach, and he does have a winning track record. But if you ever notice, like, those coaches that win, and then when they start losing, they don't
adapt.
They don't adapt. They mm-hmm. stick with what's helping them win, and they don't change with the times. And the NFL is a copycat league, and once the Saints were Sean Payton was figured out, teams copycatted on that, and dropping Drew Brees back in the shotgun would seem like a very logical thing to do for a smaller, not that fast quarterback. He's a really short quarterback. That was one of the big knocks on him coming out of Purdue was his size. He's got a cannon for an arm, but dropping him back even like the pistol formation with Mark Ingram back there, or just a straight shotgun, you think that would be, you know, that would give him the time to observe the entire field and possibly see the receiver. He's missing a lot of open receivers. So putting him in the shotgun, I think, would help out a lot. I watched the Saints game over the weekend, and he was missing a lot of receivers. I know he's banged up, and I know he's hurt, you know, with his arm and whatnot. But a lot of the throws had nothing to do with that. He was just missing them. So I agree with that. Dropping him back would be a wonderful idea, and I'm not sure why they're not doing it.
You know, you see Seattle do it frequently, and Seattle's got the same kind of a situation. I don't think Russell Wilson is as short as Drew Brees, but he's got basically the same kind of situation where when he's up under center, you'll see Russell Wilson on his tiptoes frequently, you know, on his tiptoes with the arm back, you know, looking for the receiver down the left lane or down the right lane or whatever. And you'll see frequently that I just had a brain fart. The coach up there, what's his name, he has designed it where roughly about one-third to sometimes as many as one-half of the snaps will come out of the shotgun for Russell Wilson. So I don't know. Anyhow, that's just my thinking on it as well. Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, that's a perfect observation because actually it's Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, that's not the shotgun they're running out of. They're running out of the pistol. They're running out of the college pistol, like the old Wildcat formation. And that would be exactly what you think the Saints would, you know, implement into their offense, but they don't. It's not like the traditional shotgun where, you know, he's seven steps back.
And he also has
Lynch right there beside him. You know what I'm saying? So the pistol formation is perfect. And since Lynch and Ingram, obviously, they're different, but they're the same a lot, too. And Russell Wilson's a little bit taller than Drew Brees, but Drew Brees has more weapons than Wilson. So if you give him that same pistol five-step automatic drop from the snap, it gives – I agree with you 100%. That's something that – but I feel like the big thing with Sean Payton is he's unwilling to adapt, and I probably cost him his job. Sean Payton's not going to be around after the season. I just don't see his scenario – unless they would make the playoffs, which I don't see happening, that Sean Payton keeps his job.
The pistol formation too, if I'm not mistaken, would, and again, this is a matter of adapting, the pistol formation gives Pete Carroll, and would as well to Sean Payton, give the offense and Drew Brees and the coaching staff the option, if they want, to go to the read option. Because when you're only in the 4 or 5 step back, not the, as you say, the full 7 step shotgun stance, you've got that ability to run it off and go with the read option, and you'll frequently see Wilson do that as well. That would allow Brees to do it. Although I'm not sure Drew Brees at his age would be able to pull off the read option. That's the only thing about it. But it does give you that option when you're running the pistol formation, as you point out. I don't know, Uncle Mark, jump in on your philosophical thoughts about that one.
Well, you know, I'm just kind of looking at some of the other minutia that, you know, where did the Saints leave points on the field? Well, they left 4 points with their kicker. You know, they attempted one field goal and missed it. Now, you can't do that. And they had 2 extra point attempts,
and they missed one. Well, you can't do that either. And for heaven's sake, you're in a dome. So, you know, to Nick's point, Sean Payton may already have a clue that this thing is spinning out of his control, and maybe he has, to a certain extent, he has either lost the room or he is allowing the room to get lost. On the defensive side, and I'm going to go back to that as well, you don't see the penetration. You don't see the pass rush that I think we should from Ryan. I mean, I don't know. Ryan, again, I'm just bewildered,
yeah.
And I was bewildered coming into the year that Ryan maintained his position as DC there. And
mm-hmm.
I think there is a sense of some impotence, you know, that the gun doesn't have any bullets there. They are fortunate to be in the division that they are, because I contend that it is unquestionably the weakest division of the NFC. But in fact, you know, the Buccaneers looked like they were a top flight team as compared to the Saints, and it's certainly a head scratcher. There's no doubt about it. You know, and if I may, and we'll probably touch on this further, but you know, Drew Brees right now, he's got, I guess, you know, a contusion or a bruise. We're not sure. I guess it's not broken, but the rotator cuff is a problem for him.
Yep.
And
yep.
We've discussed now that, you know, their whole plan seems to be an aerial plan more than anything else. And he's hurrying up, trying to get back. He's talking about, well, I'll work overtime. I'll do extra to make sure I can get on the field. Well, that's the kind of injury that the more you use it, I would think it's the law of diminishing return. The more you're going to wear out a bruised rotator cuff. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best answer either. I guess, you know, long story short, my concern is that Drew Brees is maybe one of the few guys right now that senses desperation and would do anything and give anything to turn the tide and stem the loss, but he might be alone in that quest.
Drew Brees is out for this week. Is that the last I heard of it? That hasn't changed, right?
Well, no, right. As far as we know, it's a game day decision. Pro Football Talk indicates that, as I just mentioned, he is pushing, and he is saying, if there's any way I can play on Sunday, I'm going to be the guy. You know, it's funny. You know, it looks like both McCown brothers might be without a starting job this week as far as QBs between, you know, Cleveland on the one side and then Luke McCown down there in New Orleans.
I don't know. Are you getting any different word on that at this point, Nick? I mean, what's still the same? It's they haven't made a decision on the QB starting for Sunday, because the way I heard it the other day was, get ready, everybody. Drew Brees isn't playing. If you've got him on your fantasy team, start looking elsewhere.
Well, I was scrambling. From Little
right.
Tracks, I was scrambling to get my notes on and everything, and I ran across everything, you know, just to catch myself up. And this was 5 minutes before I called in. And Drew Brees is a game time decision. Everything that Mark said is spot on. He's trying to gut through it. I've had three surgeries on my rotator. I tore
wow.
my rotator playing college baseball. As a freshman, long story short, I tried to come back because I was afraid I was going to lose my scholarship and my job, you know, my position. So I tried to rush back. The first time they went in, it was just a minor. Wouldn't even have to do it if I just would have rehabbed and took the time. And I rushed myself back, and I ended up having to have serious surgery that put me out for a year and a half. And then I rushed back from that. And
oh,
the same thing happened. Point being, I was 18 years old then. And, you know, I hadn't put anywhere near the pressure on my shoulder and arm as Drew Brees has.
Right.
And it's it shows a lot about Drew Brees as a man. And you're
mm-hmm.
right with everything that you're saying. He would do anything to gut this out. And that's why they don't want to say that he's not starting, because in Drew Brees is probably going in there and telling him every 5 minutes, I'm playing Sunday.
I'm
playing
guy.
Sunday.
Yep, I'm your
but
guy.
It's just not going to happen. It's just one of them. It's just one of those injuries that you need to rehab. They can say it's a game time decision all they want. There's no, if Drew Brees does play, he's probably, he's not going to help the Saints.
No, he's not going to be
effective. That's saying a lot.
Right.
No,
I would agree. And, you know, Sean Payton essentially said he is day-to-day and basically told the media, listen, I've got nothing else to tell you today about this. He is day-to-day. On the flip side, as Nick's pointing out, in his corner, talking to the media, Drew Brees is saying he has, quote, every intention of playing and that he is, quote, pretty confident that he'll be able to play on Sunday. And so, yeah, you know, it's a question of what's prudent for the best team outlook and what's best for the team versus Drew Brees saying, you know what, I feel like I'm the only guy that cares and I'll go out there on one leg and with one arm and do it if I have to.
Yep. All right. Anybody wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate to do so. You can catch hold of us here at Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz program, 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, jump in the chat room, leave us a message there, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike, at Frat House Mike, and let me hit out my Twitter poll right now. The Twitter poll for this evening, the Frat House Sports' NFL poll. Of the 9-0-2 teams, which ones, I guess maybe I should put that in parentheses, which
plural.
Right, you know, I'm assuming there's plural. Which ones make the playoffs? Oh, yeah, you can respond to me at Frat House Mike, or you can call into us right here at Frat House Sports. Let me get this call on the line here. This guy always brings a lot of energy to us, and that's Jersey in the house. All right, Jersey, what's on your mind tonight there, buddy?
Hey, my frat brothers, how you doing today?
I'm good, man.
Just trying to get some quick information. This one team I'm 0-2 is the Standard League. Just had guys hurt. Now, here's my thing. Normally, I go with Lacey, and I go with Melvin Gordon. I do have Hillman on my thing. I have Ryan Matthews, who may be starting if what's called hurt. But it's a tough matchup. And I'm going to get rid of Ball. Now, do I take aggressive thing and drop Monty Ball, which I should, and pick up Deion Lewis first, and then come back and drop Ronnie Hillman and pick up Stark? Because James Starks will be a one-week thing. I don't know if anybody will pick him up in my league. They could, but Lacey could play on Monday. So how would you – based on my guys that I have, Ball and Hill would be my two expendable, I guess.
I'm all over this.
Let me go to Nick because I'm going to tell you right now. I think basically what Jersey is saying is that's a no-brainer, isn't it, Nick? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm wondering why you have Monte Ball on your team. No disrespect at all, but Monte Ball doesn't even have a team. Deion Lewis is an asset. The New England Patriots are a pass team, and they're really upset right now, and they want to put 50 on the board against every single team in their way. LeGarrette Blount is a pounder. Last week he had two snaps in the goal line. Deion Lewis was in the game. The Patriots are going to pass a lot. He's the a younger, faster Shane Vereen.
Right.
That's a no-brainer. I wouldn't pick up Starks. I think Eddie Lacy's going to play number one. Number two, Monte Ball is expendable because he doesn't have a team. So drop Monte Ball right now, pick up Deion Lewis, and you're set. DeMarco Murray is going to play Sunday. DeMarco Murray's fine. The media overreacted.
Really?
So, I mean, I also have Ryan Matthews on my team, and I'm an Eagles fan, so I got stuck in that dilemma. But since I've pretty much given up on the team, you know, I was kind of hoping Murray would be down a week or two because I'm hurting on my one team. But that's a no-brainer. Drop Monte Ball and pick Deion Lewis up 5 minutes ago, because if you don't, someone will. I'm surprised that he's available after waivers last night, that Deion Lewis is available in your league.
Monte Ball was supposed to sign with Indianapolis. That's why I picked him up last weekend, and I dropped – I forget who it was. Somebody that wasn't any good.
God knows Indy needs him. That's for darn sure.
We'll talk about
him. Bradshaw,
we were talking.
He said he was going to sign with him, so I figured I'll be the first one on her.
were talking to Ahmad Bradshaw, too, though, Jerky.
Right.
So, you know, there's a possibility. I don't know what the Colts want to do. If I were you, though, hang on to Hillman because I think he's actually the stronger play in Denver than C.J. Anderson. So if you don't have to touch Hillman, let him ride your bench a la what you've been doing with Monte Ball. Just leave him there because I think he has some fantasy value. You know, going forward by week 5, 6, 7, when Kubiak finally gets it all going out there in Denver, Hillman might be an asset for you down the road.
So don't pick up Starks this week, then, you're saying. So if Lacy doesn't play, I would start Melvin Gordon and probably Deion Lewis then, right? That's what you're saying?
But let me ask this question. Nick, you obviously have some insight on this. Because the last I heard, Lacy was questionable. You're saying don't go with Stark. I would actually recommend, if in fact that's going to continue to be a questionable situation, pick up Stark.
Well, from every indication, from like I said, when I looked through like the things I assumed that we were going to talk about, and also the show outline. So Lacy's probably going to play, but looking at it from a strictly fantasy standpoint, okay, you're going to pick up a 1 to 2 maximum week Band-Aid on a team that has a bazillion weapons in the Packers, right?
Yep.
Deion Lewis has LeGarrette Blount came back last week and was on the field for two plays.
Two
the
snaps.
Patriots put up like 50 points, and Lewis was on the field. Uh-huh. So you have a guy that's not even on an NFL team. Right? Now, I agree with everything that Frau's Mark saying, Uncle Mark saying. Everything that he's saying about keeping Hillman, I love Hillman. I have him on one of my teams. The fact that Deion Lewis is available, drop Monte Ball. I wouldn't look for a Band-Aid because you have a decent center.
Yeah,
back
you're
going to
be okay. You just got to bridge the gap this week. I agree.
Yep.
Okay.
Grab Lewis, like right now.
Yep.
When we're on the phone,
he's a
get
lot
on
of
your
fun.
Computer and pick up Deion Lewis.
He's a lot of fun. And
I'll put him from tonight because I'm the first one to wear West, so I'll get him. It'll hit. You know, after midnight, 1, 2 o'clock, so I'm the first one. And like you said, it's a one-week Band-Aid with Stark. And Stark is not a bad player. I mean, if Woodsville's going to be out for a while, then you know he's getting the rocks, that'd be a different story. But you know, with Belichick, I call it Belichick or Belichick. But you never know what Belichick
is. You know what? That backfield, and that's really the fantasy player's nightmare, is that Patriots backfield, because you do not know really until about a half hour before game time what Belichick is going to do. But at the same time, this kid Lewis has been exceptionally fun.
Yep.
And while I would think Blount should be back in the game, they're playing, what do they have, Jacksonville Jaguars,
Jacksonville,
I believe this will?
Jacksonville
fun.
At home.
So once they get – they get like a 14-point lead, they'll probably go back to the ground game. So Blount might get some ground and pound, but Lewis can play both sides of it. He can play as a receiver out of the backfield set, or he can be your goal line vulture. I don't think you can lose with him.
You see,
I have one question for you, Jersey. Like, so you haven't done your waiver. Your league hasn't went, and their waiver, your waivers haven't went through.
No, they go through after midnight tonight for Thursday. All my other leagues did. They all went through this morning, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, mine go.
Is Matt Jones available in the waiver wire for you?
Who?
Matt Jones from Washington.
From Florida, plays for Washington.
Somebody already has Matt Jones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you've got to pick Deion Lewis up.
Somebody's got Matt Jones, but they don't have Lewis.
that's crazy to me.
He's a sleeper, and everybody's afraid of that. I'm telling you, they're afraid of the Patriots' backfield, man.
Well, my PPR league this week I have Deion Lewis starting in there. See, I have Hill, I have Foster, I have D'Angelo Williams, I have Le'Veon Bell. I'm a stud team, man. I put up 190 points. Now, the only where I'm weak at, Ram kind of killed me this week, this past week. I also have Jordan. I have Reed, you know, Washington's guy on my bench. But what's been killing me is Devontae Adams. I have Devontae Adams. I have Cooper. I have, what's his name? Spit it out. I have Antoine Bolden. Now, what I did is I dropped Beasley for Travis Benjamin. There's not too much up. Now, somebody just dropped, which would be available if I put it in on Friday night, it'll hit Saturday morning. Somebody dropped, and I do like him, but he's another rookie, is Aguilar. Would you drop Travis Benjamin for Aguilar to have on your bench?
No.
I would drop Aguilar.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah, I like Benjamin.
No. Yeah, so do I.
But Johnny Manziel's not quarterbacking now, man. He got
doesn't matter.
Back.
It won't matter.
Doesn't matter.
He's got so much upside to special teams in that, that Benjamin, I think, is going to find his home in Cleveland. Yeah. I don't care if they put they could put Colonel Sanders out there as a quarterback, and I think Benjamin will still score.
Yeah, I mean, who is he going to throw to? There's no other weapons. There's no
exactly.
I don't get special teams points for him. I just get, you know, I don't get the special teams goes. If he runs a back rate, it would just be who catches the pass, whatever, in the PPR.
Did you watch any touchdowns last week? The guy is amazing. He's like runs like a 4.340.
He put up 21. He put up 21 of the 28 points. Now, granted, seven were special teams, but the other two touchdowns were him.
That guy has fast moved up the depth chart.
Yes,
fast moved up the depth chart despite whoever the quarterback's going to be.
Tells you how bad things are in Cleveland, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's caught six passes for 204 yards and three touchdowns, but it's all been from Johnny Manziel. He didn't do anything with Allen or whatever.
That was only week one. It's okay.
Yeah,
that was only week one.
Exactly. Johnny Manziel's
in the gap and a half.
Johnny Manziel's for a game and a half over
Aguilar then. You're saying keep Benjamin over Aguilar, so I'll do that.
I would touch an Eagle with a 10-foot pole on my starting fantasy team. If I could get rid of them all, I would.
Okay.
I didn't draft any.
My last question is, and I hate to always bring it up, I'm getting killed by Prater and Detroit offense. They're not sputtering within the 20. They're putting the sixes on. Now, you got a guy like you got the Giants kicker, because the Giants seem to sputter. I don't care if it's because Parkey did good for a couple of years, and there's no dome in Philly. So you want teams, Eagles always use a sputter inside the 20. The Giants do. I'm staying away from Robbie Gould. Robbie Gould and the guy, I guess, Brown from the Giants are 28 and 27. They have the most points. They both kicked six field goal attempts, made six. That's right. What I want. I could care less about how powerful that team is. I didn't want the team to sputter within the 30 to 40 yard line or within the 20 all the time they got the ball and kicked field goal. So right now, Prater is no good to me because I should have picked up that McMenamis guy, but that was my mistake because of a mile high stick. What's your feeling on? I mean, do I try to ride Prater because they're not kicking field goals? I mean, he's got one field goal and that's it. And you know, Brown.
Who's available?
And I don't.
Yeah,
trust
right.
Gold.
That's my question. Who's available?
Yeah, I don't trust Gold with Chicago because now they might not have Cutler there. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know with Eli. You know what you get. He does.
Well, Jersey, I got a question for you. Are you looking to stream your kickers from week to week, or are you trying to find one guy to ride all year?
Because
if you're going to ride one guy all year, there's no perfect marriage there. If you want to stream, I would say grab up Zuerlein for the Rams this week because the matchup there is very favorable for him.
Legatron,
and he can kick indoors or out.
He can kick 70 yards without breaking a sweat.
Every draft bag costs me $5, so I was going to drop, let's say, D'Angelo Williams and grab another kicker. Then I could have
two kickers.
Oh, you don't want two, dude.
What?
That's a violation.
Keep D'Angelo Williams.
Uncle Mark, you take him down there. Holy cow.
Whoa.
This place doesn't do no trade. But if Bell goes down, then D'Angelo Williams.
Deja vu here. Goodness gracious.
What?
Kickers on your fantasy team, you're gonna take a rock. You were thinking about dropping a starting running back.
Yeah.
You don't do that. No. No, absolutely
D'Angelo
not.
Williams will never see my lineup again this year unless Bell gets hurt. When Foster comes back, I got Foster. I got Hill. You know what
but
I mean?
But then pick
I got
a wide receiver. Pick up a
Oh, my God. You know what? This
work,
isn't a bad
a
tight end. This isn't
work
a bad
a
tight end here. You could pick up a decent tight end. I would do that before I'd pick up a second kicker.
I do. I got Graham and Jordan Reed from Washington. I don't need a tight end.
Reed. Fine. Watch Reed fade. My God, he's a disappointment. He's guaranteed he's going to play 16 games this year. I'll tell you what, I'll eat my hat if he does.
I tell you, I need Reed for a one-week thing when Seattle's on a bye.
I hope he's healthy for you, Jersey.
and if not, then I'll have to pick up somebody then. But there's nothing worthwhile on the waiver wire, believe me.
We know. We're in a 16-team league, so we know over here.
Yeah, and it's bad. So that's why, like I said, I originally was going to get rid of D'Angelo, but I said, you know, I better hold on to him just in case something happens to Bell. He's a plug-in because he's played so well. If he didn't put the points like he did in the first 2 weeks, maybe that'd been a different story. But I tell you what, he gave me 30-some points this past week. And I weathered the storm. I'm 2-0 with two weekly highs. The only thing I got to work out once in a while is I need consistency out of Graham. I need to get my receivers squared away. I got Brady. I got him in the 7th round. So, like I said, it's a matter of just tweaking my stuff here and there. So that's why I wanted to run it by you guys. In that PPR league, I'm good. The other league, I'm 0-2, standard. Taking nothing rolling. Evans gave me 0. Roddy White gave me 0. Lacey gave me 0.09. Tillman gave me 3.9. I just couldn't get nothing in that league. Because I didn't trust Gordon again. And Gordon didn't do bad. So, again, I'm starting to see as they're going now. So, like I said, I will get rid of Monty Ball.
Yep.
Like I said, I thought he was going to sign. I'll pick up Deion Lewis. And
good.
I'll hold tight. Hopefully Lacey does play. But if he doesn't, then I'll see what's what. Maybe, I don't know. Again, him being the Monday night game, who would you play then? Would you go Deion Lewis and Melvin Gordon, I guess? Not play Lacey? Because if I don't
You got a little bit of a situation there, because you got to wait.
You just take a split. If you're 2-0 in that league, like you said you were, you never want to lose a game, but you want to have someone in there for sure. You're 0-3. Oh, you said the first waiver.
Yeah,
I would. Lacey's going to play, but he's going to be on like a pitch count. So,
yep.
You're going to get the split between him and Starks. Either way, in my opinion,
right.
And with Starks, I don't see him getting the Lacey workload that everyone's assuming he's going to. Now, that's not saying that Deion Lewis isn't either. So it's a tough spot, but it's fantasy, and you got to take chances sometimes to win titles.
Yep.
And I think Lewis may pay bigger dividends down the road if Lacey is healthy and does play and doesn't get hurt again the rest of the year. Because where Starks would be valuable to me or somebody is if Lacey's at any period of time and you can plug and play him, he's getting the rock so many 15, 20 carries. You know what I mean? So, all right, I'll pick up Lewis, and I'll drop I'm also going to drop Owen Daniels, and because I got Ebron. Ebron's done well, and I'm going to pick up that guy from Baltimore, Gilmore. I'm going to try to see if I get him. But a lot of people have some tight ends that got hurt, like the guy from Tampa Bay. So people may be putting in, but I want the running back first. So I got Ebron. I can live with him. And I'll tell you, a lot of guys signed up this year, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Delanie Walker, he's another one. Look out for him. If you see him, don't pick him up because I don't think he's starting this week for the Titans.
Yeah, he's already on somebody's roster, and I'm telling you, both.
Oh, okay. Well, they're not starting him because I don't think he's playing.
Yeah,
any.
And the other one you have to, in the standard league, you got to carry two tight ends. So right off the bat, you got 24 tight ends taken, and I'm telling you, you got guys that are hurt. So it's really slim pickings, out there now. So, again, I appreciate your advice. I'll keep Prather, I guess. I'll try him one more week and see what happens. But he's my weakest link on my big team, on my PPR team. He's just not 3 points. He's just not putting any points up. And I hate missing that Brown already has given 27 points. And like I said, I don't trust Robbie Gould, but I like Brown. With that offense, man, their defense is so-so, and they sputter a lot with Eli. And they get a lot of field goals. And that's what you want. I just care less if the team wins or loses. I want teams that sputter. That's going to give me the 3 points for every kick, or 4 points if it's 40-yard line, or 5 points if it's 50 yards or more. That's what I want,
Yep.
So that's what I'm looking for. So the Giants seem to be much more in-depth for that to happen, like you said, or St. Louis versus Chicago, because they don't have Cutler. I don't know what their quarterback's going to do there. They could put up nothing,
Mm-hmm.
But, all right, then I'll hold on to him a little bit, see what happens with Prather, and hopefully they get their act together there. But who knows? But, guys, I really appreciate your advice. Thanks for tweaking stuff. Hopefully I'll get 6 championships in 8 years now. I've already did 5 in the last 7, so you guys tweaking little things here and there makes it work out. So, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Best of luck.
All right, Jersey.
Thanks for taking my call, man. Have a good day. Have a good night.
Yeah,
you
got it, Jersey. Thanks.
Thanks, yeah, man. Yeah, bye-bye.
Yep.
Jersey can bring it. Jersey hasn't quite figured out the Frat House sports schedule.
No, we got to get him on Fridays.
That's what
we have more time too.
Friday.
Don't you go 2 hours? You go 2 hours on Friday, so you got the time for Jersey to do the 15 minutes of therapy and that.
I love Jersey. Don't get me
I
wrong.
I do, too. He's a lot
Don't
of
get
it,
me
yeah.
wrong. I love Jersey in the
He's
house.
An adrenaline rush.
Listen, I've had Jersey call me on a Saturday.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, he reminds me a lot of he reminds me a lot of you, Nick, a little bit. I mean, and I don't mean from the standpoint of the personality, but I mean from the standpoint of this guy, he must eat, live, breathe fantasy sports. You know what I mean? You know, because he has called us now on a Thursday, on a Friday, and on a Saturday.
That's great.
So.
Yeah, no. That's awesome, man. Like, he's a high adrenaline guy. I mean, I can respect him. You know what?
Absolutely.
As much as I play, I have questions. I mean, I was asking.
Sure.
I was talking to you and Caleb last night.
Oh,
like,
my God.
As much as I think I know, it's nice to run it by someone just to, you know, just to get someone else's opinion. Like, you know the answer. But sometimes when you have someone like yourself and Caleb, you know, like, it's nice just to hear you guys say what I'm already thinking. Because I'm questioning myself. As
Absolutely.
I've been playing for over 15 years. And I question myself, so sometimes it's nice just to have someone say, you know what, you just need that little extra push, but, you know.
Well, I mean, I know I've got a question. I got a question for Friday night's show. I've already have a question for
I
my
definitely.
And I know
I will definitely be yes, I will be calling in Friday. I have a perfect dilemma, so, yes, I will be visiting with you all on Friday.
I do as well, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but let's
all right,
move
yeah,
around.
We got to move it on. Back to sit
back to reality.
Yeah, everybody
we'll
sit up straight.
With the time we've got
your book. Open your book to page.
With the time, yeah, really, with the time we've got left here, we won't be able to get through everything. But no, if anybody else out there wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz, or leave us a message in the chat room or hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Let me go. Now, look, we just got done talking a little bit before Jersey jumped in with us. We had got talking a little bit about Jameis Winston. Let's get talking. Let's go back. Let's talk a little bit about that Marcus Mariota. And basically what we're doing is we're kind of bookending what we saw from week one. Because in week one, it was, in fact, Marcus Mariota against Jameis Winston. Now we talked a little bit about Jameis Winston on his own. Seemed to hold his own. Did okay, you know, against the New Orleans team. Let's go over and take a look at Marcus Mariota and how he did against what, in my opinion, should have been a win even on the road against the Cleveland Browns team and Johnny Manziel under center. And with all the accolades that Marcus Mariota was given from the week before, you know, the perfect QB rating that he had gotten the week before against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, well, it all kind of seemed to dissolve a bit. Marcus Mariota was 21 of 37 for 257 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. Listen, you got to give it to this kid so far. Two full games in the NFL, no interceptions as a rookie. I give him kudos for that. QB rating was respectable, 96.3. Johnny Manziel was 8 of 15. You know, Manziel reminds me more and more and more of a modern day, well, I say modern day, let's say contemporary version of Tim Tebow. 8 of 15, 172 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, 133.9. Okay? Tennessee lost by double. Cleveland won this game 28-14. It's turnovers. It was turnovers. Everything was turnovers. That's what it was on this one. And, in fact, the number of turnovers on both sides of the ball was just actually kind of ridiculous, to be perfectly honest with you. Let me just see here. I just want to see. I'm just trying to go. We had three for Tennessee. Of course, obviously, that hurt them. There were a couple of turnovers, however. There were a couple of fumbles on the other side of the ball, but they were not fumbles lost. But anyhow, Okamark, jump in on this one. I, you know, look, it's already been announced excuse me, it's already been announced that we're going back to McCown for this week. I have heard from some of my Cleveland Brown fans. Yes, I do have a couple, believe it or not. I do, yeah. Frat House Mike has a couple of Cleveland Browns fans. And you're saying, really? There are Cleveland Browns fans out there? I have heard from a couple of them, and they're not too happy about it. They thought Manziel should have stayed in there. I don't know. To me, I don't know. But it's Mike Pettine, and the guy just seems to, you know, I don't know. He wakes
he
up.
Vacillates. And, he vacillates
and
goes back and forth.
Morning, right. He wakes up one morning and goes, I think I'm going to do this. I don't know. What do you think of this one?
Well, you know, I give credit to Manziel for putting together a decent game. his QB rating, you know, 8 of 15. But he did the requirement to get a QB rating that high. I mean, he did fine. I give the credit for the points, though, to Travis Benjamin. I mean, like I say, let's be honest. I mean, you know, he had 3 receptions, 115 yards. 2 of them were TDs. One was a 60-yard long passing play that he just smoked everybody. He wound up finding special team points. So when you take his 21 out of it, okay, and you put the same Manziel out there, they're losing this game 14-7. So there's that. On the other side, with respect to the youngster, who I think is going to be fine, Mariota, and I think he's going to be okay this weekend before he goes on his bye week. They're playing at home. I think he's going to rebound nicely. The kid took 7 sacks. They beat him up and threw him around like a rag doll. And, you know, there's nobody, I don't care what, you could be the best quarterback out there. You could be Superman, but if you get sacked 7 times, there's no way you're going to find effect to have an offensive game. And it goes back to the basic fact that Tennessee Titans are more than just a piece or two away from being a good team. They're a bad team, and they're going to continue to struggle, and they're going to continue to be a bad team. I don't know if they're a 2-14 team like they were a year ago, but, you know, they're probably realistically a 5-11 team when it's all said and done. And that doesn't say that Mariota won't have a great rookie year, and he could be rookie of the year despite that. But the bottom line was, with that kind of punishment, I think the 14 points that was put up by Tennessee is more a testament to the fact they couldn't protect their quarterback and keep anything going than it was that Manziel and those Browns are real, and everybody hide the women and children because they're coming.
The where did I want to go with that? Real quick. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Let me get. I got distracted here for a minute. Let me get.
What do you
let me
think,
get Nick?
Nick?
Yeah, let me get Nick in here. I'm sorry. I got distracted there for a second.
No worries. You know, I always have an opinion on everything. So you know, like if you ever stumble around, just come to me because I have a strong opinion on it. With the Marcus Mariota thing, I think they're going to lose again this week. I don't see the Colts starting out 0-3. I just wanted to throw that out there, but. With the Manziel the aspects of the Cleveland Browns, one of the things that Manziel brings to the game that McNown doesn't is his legs. He developed those passes to Benjamin were because of him scrambling. They don't have that great of an offensive line, obviously neither does Tennessee, but they don't have that great of an offensive line. He's scrambling around in freelancing a lot like he did at Texas A&M. If you remember Texas A&M when he was with Mike Evans, a lot of those long passes looked eerily familiar to those passes to Benjamin Sunday, where he's in trouble. He's doing like spinning around, doing 360s and, you know, falling down and running and then just chucking the ball. They're not good plays. They're not. When you break it down and look at it like NFL-style quarterback, the guy that you want leading your franchise, they're not good plays. He's getting, you know, he's giving himself more time. The Cleveland Browns don't have their franchise quarterback on the roster. So from the Cleveland ownership and from a fan standpoint, I can't imagine being a Browns fan as bad as it is in Philly. But if I was a Browns fan, I would want to see Manziel, I guess, because it makes things a little more exciting. But he's not a good quarterback, and I think people are fooled by that. Marcus Mariota, on the other hand, he's a good quarterback. Yep. They don't have a running game. They Kendall Wright's their best wide receiver. He's a decent possession wide receiver. He's a poor man's Anquan Boldin. But they don't have a great receiving core. Bishop Stanky is not. He's stanky. He's not a very good running back. They don't have a very good offensive line. So, like, they're going to build something there, I think. It's going to take a couple of years. And that's the problem in the NFL. Is it's just, you know, 5 minutes ago we won it. But they're heading in the right direction. Because he's going to be a decent quarterback. He's so intelligent. You know, anyone that watched his tape in college or games in college, to even the little things, they breaking them down and watching his games the last 2 weeks. He's the last quarterback, not to compare him to this guy, but the last quarterback that I've seen come in this intelligent with his decisions and not putting his head down would be Luck, Andrew Luck. Like, that's – obviously he's not built like them. They're not the same quarterback. But I'm just looking at it from, like, the intelligence quarterback stuff, you know, play.
Intangible stuff.
There hasn't been that many good quarterbacks. Who's the best quarterback since Luck that's come to the NFL?
Bridgewater might be. Bridgewater might be.
He's decent. Decent. The knock on Bridgewater is, and I don't know if it's Mike Zimmer just holding him back and having, you know, one of the best running backs in the world ever back there. But we really haven't seen Bridgewater get a chance to air down. I love Teddy Bridgewater. Mike, you know that. I draft him in fantasy teams. I love him. I'd like to see what he would do being able to air it out. I do think that he has weapons. But Mike Zimmer has he has a team where he doesn't need to do that, where with Tennessee, there's no running game. You know, there's no receivers. So it's Marcus Mariota and the guys that they throw out there with them. In Minnesota, they have a great offensive line. They have the best running back in the game. They have a couple of decent receivers, a decent tight end. So Teddy Bridgewater doesn't have as much on his plate. But Bridgewater is a good example. But I think that Marcus Mariota is probably the best quarterback to come out since Luck. I'd like to see a little bit more, obviously, from both of them. But just a quick – I don't think Marcus Mariota is as great as everyone thought after week one, but I think that he's head and shoulders above anyone else.
The thing that I pointed out, particularly after week one, maybe not as much in week two, because as Uncle Mark just pointed out, you know, my gosh, we saw the kid get sacked, unfortunately, 7 times. Now, that's not so much Bridgewater's, or that's not so much Mariota's fault, as it might be more just, you know, listen, they're going to need to do some work on the offensive line, obviously.
Yeah.
But there were a couple of times that I thought that he made poor reads. He made poor reads. Excuse me. The pocket was collapsing. He might have been able to sneak out of it. We know the kid's got some wheels. He can move around. And he didn't make the move when he should have. And he ended up having everything collapsing around him. In those situations, I think the sacks are on Mariota.
He took them too. He put his finger on chest and said, "Listen, it was my fault." I mean, he had three fumbles and he lost two of them. And the reason was because he's young, and his desire is to not turn it over by throwing INTs. He doesn't want to do it that way, so he'd rather almost take the loss and take the sack. But he doesn't realize, or he's starting to quickly realize, that these giant guys that are coming up and strip sacking him, you know, that's as damaging or worse as throwing an INT. So it's going to take a few more weeks. It's a whole year for him to get his feet wet. And I would agree with Nick. He's going to be great going forward. But, yeah, I mean, another thing, kudos to a guy that's absolutely just a role player and sort of an old head. Dexter McCluster, and they're putting him in, and he's finding almost 100 yards on the ground for him. So, you know, unsung hero in what looks like from the box score to have been just complete annihilation. There were some bright spots for Tennessee despite the final score.
Yep. And, you know, I'm glad you brought him up, because I was just about to turn to Uncle Mark and go, "Uncle Mark, somebody that I know caught your eye because
Fun to watch. He really was fun to watch. It was funny. Sankey, who's really the starter, was coming out and spelling McCluster, and it should be the reverse, right? So he was a lot of fun to watch, and he, you know, like I say, he gave him time, and he helped keep Mariota cool, calm, and collected so Mariota could go back out and say, "Okay, wow, we got a first down. We can keep this thing going."
And it looks like McCluster might have himself perhaps second life, a second career almost sort of thing there in Tennessee. So, look, no doubt about it, Tennessee is work in progress. I think they're a good work in progress. I think they're ahead of. I think they're certainly ahead of Tampa Bay for sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a conversation for another night, maybe. But we'll come back to that though.
Okay, I think
they're
ahead.
Put that
in your tickler file, and we'll come back
and
talk about
that. I think they're ahead of Tampa Bay. Ahead of Tampa Bay. That's just my personal opinion. Let's go over to the NFC. I'm going to open some wounds here. Let's go over and take a look at the NFC East. I'm going to jump a game up, and then we'll...
The boys and the Eagles?
Yeah, and then maybe what we'll do is we'll wrap it around, and we'll get to that Redskins game on the backside. As I started out the show this evening, I pointed out that the City of Brotherly Love is in a tailspin. Absolute turmoil. The Philadelphia Eagles right now are 0-2 after going down and losing at home to the Dallas Cowboys 20-10 with a backup quarterback, Brandon Weeden, coming in to spell Tony Romo after he went out with a broken collarbone. It was absolutely a deplorable display by the Philadelphia Eagles game plan. I don't even know where to start. There was so much hype made about the fact that we had the three-headed monster come in here with this ground game of DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, and Darren Sproles. And on 17 carries on Sunday, they had a whopping total of 7 yards. I don't even know how that's mathematically possible. 17 carries between you throw in 2 more carries by Sam Bradford, then it becomes 17.
Well, he was your leading rusher, Sam Bradford, with 9 yards.
Sam Bradford was the leading rusher with 9 yards, yeah. Incredible. Sam Bradford, 23 of 37, 224 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, 65.6 QB rating. I don't know what to say here. Nick, I got to go to you. I really do want to get your perspective on it, too, because I know you're a big Eagles fan, and I know you're a big NFL follower. This is second week in a row we've seen a really, really bad game plan. There's a lot of people right now that are doubting Chip Kelly. Doubting all the moves he's made. You're saying DeMarco Murray is actually going to play this week. Give me an update on that one. I guess start there. What's DeMarco Murray?
Well, be ready for the Eagles. I had sent him a text about 5:36 o'clock, and when I was getting ready to go on, I seen the text, and it said that it's being overblown, that, you know, he's fine, that he's going to play. It was nothing more than, you know, a little dang up, and he went into as a precaution, and he's going to play on Sunday. I take the man for his word. He helped me out a lot when I was writing, helped me break a lot of articles, and I believe that to be true. I think DeMarco Murray would play through it regardless. But I think that around here we're just waiting for, you know, more bad news. When that popped up, I was like, well, here we go. You know, here we go with more stuff. It just felt like the hits kept coming. You know, you had said the 2 poor games. I thought that in the Falcons game, like the second half, I saw life, and I saw a team that I thought I was going to see, and I just thought it was too little too late. So going into the Cowboys game, in my mind, it was just not possible that the Eagles could lose this. You've known me long enough now, I'm not the cup guy, the cup half full. Like, I'm a negative, hard, I'm harder on my favorite teams than I am on anyone. I went into this game with so much confidence, because in the second half of that fucking game, it looked like they just were knocking the rust off, they were starting to get in the rhythm, and they came out, and I watched, in my 39 years on the planet, I've been watching football probably 34 of them, I've never seen anything like that. Never. This was the one time I agreed with everything that Troy Aikman was saying. And Joe, that was embarrassing. Embarrassing to the maximum. Sam Bradford looked scared. He looked like the JV quarterback. No, actually, he looked like an eighth grade quarterback going into the big varsity game. He looked so scared to do anything, not just run or get injured. He wasn't making his reads. I played quarterback for in high school and junior high, and I was seeing stuff. If I'm sitting on my couch and I can see stuff, you know, he shouldn't be seeing it. You know, like, not to be an armchair quarterback. And a lot of the times in the NFL, you can't, you know, like, people talk like this. But with Sam Bradford, he was missing. There was one play, Aguilar ran across, I think he was running somewhere like a slant. And he was, it was when they were driving down, and he ended up throwing that perfect pass to Sean Lee. He was wide open. He went in and found the soft spot in the zone. Bradford never even did a second read. He focused in on Zach Ertz and never looked. Oh, that was Cooper on that one. There was two. There was that one to Cooper where he never did his reads, and Cooper came wrapped around in the back of the end zone, dragging down the corner. And then there was another one, I believe it was third down, where Aguilar went and found the soft spot in that zone, and he just missed him. It was awful. It was awful, and I can't I don't understand. Like, there's not many times that I get completely, you know, just I have no idea what to think. But this team is awful. They're awful in every way. And it's like, you know, I ripped Chip Kelly when he came here, you know, and I ripped him and ripped him and ripped him and everywhere I could rip him. And I started believing him in this summer. And it's like I'm more mad at myself than I've ever been. Because I can't stand the guy. Never liked it. Didn't like the hiring, none of it. And I didn't like the things he did in the offseason. And I slowly started to come around. And this is what he's doing to our wonderful Eagles. He for every move he made in two openings. And, you know, I'm not one that buys into the whole offensive line. Because you look at the offensive linemen that left the Eagles, they're not doing good on their new teams. So it's not that. There's a lot of stuff going on there. And what bothers me the most is that he is so arrogant. And everything about his personality I despise seems to be coming out even more. He's not – like when Josh Hoff came out and said it felt like the Cowboys were reading their plays, and then, you know, Josh Hoff came out today and said, you know, no, I didn't mean it like that. Because Chip Kelly asked him about it. He has such a lockdown on that locker room. I think that they're scared to make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. He's running it like a dictator, and like they're college players, and they're not. And it's a backlash, and I think that this is going to be, unfortunately, a horrible season. And it stinks for Philadelphia because, you know, you go from baseball season to, you know, hockey to basketball. We hold on to this football, and now we have nothing. And it's an empty feeling. And when you were even opening this conversation, I got a sick feeling in my stomach, like an honest-to-God sick feeling in my stomach.
I heard I want to say it was, I'm almost positive, it was Ron Jaworski this evening talking about the game, talking about Sam Bradford in particular. You're bringing up the fact that, you know, he's missing the reads. Well, and I might agree with Jaworski. One of the things that Jaworski was pointing out was you got to remember something. With the Chip Kelly offense, there's not a heck of a lot of time to read. Because it's a tempo offense. It's not an offense like you see, say, for instance, in Indianapolis, where, look, you'll see Andrew Luck under center, but you'll also see him back in the shotgun, and he's audibilizing. You'll see him come up. We saw it on Monday night. It wasn't effective, but we saw it nonetheless. We saw him come up to the line, clap, 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 kill, 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 and he's audibling. Well, there's no time in the Chip Kelly offense to audible. So Bradford is dropping back, and he is staying with the primary receiver because there's no time. Or he's not even dropping back. He's already dropped back because he's in the shotgun. So, you know, for the heat that Sam Bradford has taken in the past couple of days, he's looked timid. He looked scared. Deer in the headlights. I'm going to be honest with you. I've been less critical of Sam Bradford, believe it or not, than I have been of the entire game plan. Where is this rushing game? Where is this ground game that we heard was going to be the 50-50 thing? That's what I don't get. You know, what we're suddenly seeing is we're seeing Kelly abandon the run game exactly in the same MO that Andy Reid did consistently, and that was the thing that we criticized the Andy Reid, a lot of the late Andy Reid regime for, was that he would abandon the ground game too soon. And we saw it absolutely epitomized on Sunday with the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not as critical. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not as critical of Sam Bradford. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've never been a fan of Sam Bradford. Well, no, I take that back. I have been a fan of Sam Bradford. Not on my team. So that's where that goes. I have been a fan of Sam Bradford. I was not a fan of us acquiring him, and I've never been a fan of Chip Kelly. I don't like what I'm seeing right now. Uncle Mark, jump in. Eagles, Dallas. Here's the problem. You've got two guys here who are passionately Eagles fans, and perhaps maybe you can bring a slightly objective perspective.
There's nothing good to say about this team objectively talking about this game. Out of due respect, though, I know everybody couldn't wait to see the Walrus ship out to Kansas City, but I don't think even the Walrus put together as poor a performance as we saw there on Sunday night, was it? It was a Sunday late
afternoon.
Game.
Sunday afternoon, yeah.
This, I'll say, projecting it forward, I'm not surprised at all that the Jets are favored. Matter of fact, I'm surprised they're not favored by more. And this Eagles team right now, in an absolute shambles, is going to head out there to visit with a Jets team which has allowed 7 points to a high offense Colts team. And the prior week, of course, they held the Browns to a mere 10 points. The Jets don't need to score a lot of points. They realize if they can shut you out and shut you down and keep you playing within their ability to beat you, and I absolutely foresee that the case as a very probable outcome for Sunday. See, that was the thing. The defense was completely exhausted. So I can't even fault the defense for the fact that, they lost this game. The defense was the reason they didn't lose the game worse, in my view. At the same time, and to your point about the tempo, and I would agree with you essentially, Fred House Mike, about the tempo. The problem with the tempo is the tempo for under Chip Kelly operates much like a person that's riding a bicycle. You can't ride the bicycle if you get on the bike and just lift your feet and sit there. The tempo only works once you get moving. If you can get moving, it's like a train. Then you can start to do that. Oh, now we're going to go tempo. And that's when Bradford's going to be – that's when his mind starts to click. And now he's going to go through his reads. What we saw was there were no tires on the car at all. That car was up on cement blocks, and it started that way and it stayed that way. And to your point, Nick, I would agree with you. Coming out of the Falcons game, yeah, they were outscored 23-3 in the first half, but then they turned it around and they outscored the Falcons like 21-3 in the second half, and it gave everybody hope. And they lost that thing basically on a bad opportunity, essentially, because it was a 26-24 final with the Falcons. So the Eagles were actually in that, and I didn't feel bad coming out of that 0-1 after week one. I said, that's all right. Listen, little hiccup. They'll take a step forward. Oh, no way, man. They jumped off a cliff last week, and I'm really not sure. I'm not sure, and I think there are a lot of guys that are feeling real, real bad, and I'm not sure that Chip Kelly I tend to agree. I think his attitude is, hey, if you guys don't want to play my way, everybody's getting a beating. I don't see him necessarily as being a positive motivator. I see him as, like you say, dictator and negative authority. You do it my way or I'll cut you. And I think a lot of guys are running scared or defiant right now. It's going to take some doing to get this team going right.
There's already some talk that, listen, if things continue the way that it's going, Chip Kelly may lose the locker room. And once that happens, well, we know what happens, right? A la
yep.
Washington Redskins, a la New York
San
Jets,
Fran.
A la
the Bears
yeah,
last
San
year.
Fran, San Fran, the Bears,
yep.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
We got about 10 minutes remaining. That's about it, guys. So we're going to run through. Excuse me. Let me run through real quick here. Maybe we do this in about 5 minutes. I want to run through real quick. The Washington Redskins, 24-10 over the St. Louis Rams. Holy smokes, who'd have thunk it? Take a look at the NFC East all of a sudden. The Dallas Cowboys, without a quarterback and without their star wide receiver, are 2-0. Washington Redskins, 1-1. Giants and Eagles in the basement at 0-2. The Redskins helped their cause coming out, and frankly, I think surprisingly beat the St. Louis Rams. I didn't expect it. I didn't pick the Redskins. And beat them by 2 touchdowns. Kirk Cousins, 23 of 27. Yeah, 203 yards. 1 touchdown, no interceptions, 110.3 QB rating. It was an anomaly, right? That's what it was. It was an anomaly. The St. Louis Rams, you know, look, let's get it straight in my opinion. They got Nick Foles. He's exactly what his performance was, 17 of 32, 150 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions. He's a middle-of-the-pack quarterback. That's what they've got. That's what they've got right now. I don't know. What do you take away from the Washington Redskins real quick? Uncle Mark, what do you take away from this one?
Yeah, I guess I'll say two names, you know, that made all the difference. Rookie Matt Jones, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns. And surprisingly effective, Kirk Cousins. He avoided turnovers, you know, and basically the Redskins, they dominated for a half, and then they just kind of held on and stuck around and hung around and hung around with St. Louis. St. Louis sputtered. You know, we've seen Nick Foles. He had a bad game. It was a Nick Foles outing. I mean, that's we're used to it here in the Philadelphia region. We know about that. But, you know, that 17-0 halftime lead that the Redskins took into the room was enough. So shame on Coach Fisher and company for not readjusting. You know, Pierre Garçon, I guess, you know, he had a nice day. He's trying to prove he's still relevant, and I guess he made his case a little bit this past Sunday.
Nick, Washington Redskins, huh? They're in second place in the NFC East. What do you think?
The NFC East, I think the NFC East is going to look a lot like the NFC South did last year.
Yeah, I do, too.
That was one of the – when Romo went down, normally I would think, okay, you know, the Eagles got a shot here because it's going to be an awful East division. I think the Redskins are better than people give them credit for because of all the problems they got going on. But they have a decent team. I think that Kirk Cousins – put in the right position can be an above average quarterback, and they have put the offense instead of the coach force feeding an offense on a team. What we have here in Philadelphia, you have a coach playing to his quarterback strength. Kirk Cousins is a better Trent Dilfer. He's a game manager. They have a solid running game. They have a decent offensive line. They have an average to below average defense. When DeSean Jackson gets back, they have a weapon. Jordan Reed is the, you know, he does get injured quite a bit, but if he's healthy, he's a wide receiver playing tight end. And we've seen, since Tony Gonzalez, those tight ends flourish because linebackers can't cover them. Right now I'm looking at the NFC East, and as crazy as this sounds, it would have sounded even crazier 2 weeks and 3 weeks ago. The Washington Redskins are looking like the best team. I mean, right now, without Romo, without Dez, the Washington Redskins, and it's because Gruden has taken his system, dumbing it down a little bit, and he's made it Kirk Cousins friendly. And they have two bell cow running backs back there, and they complement each other well. They are, you know, Kirk Cousins seems to be a very good leader. He was a great kid in college. They look decent. They play well at home. I mean, they're 1-1 at home, but, you know, they usually play pretty good at home. They're going to get healthy and get DeSean Jackson back. I mean, if you look at the rest of the NFC East, the Eagles look obviously awful. The Cowboys are in a whole bunch of trouble. Brandon Weeden was quoted, I think, a year ago saying something like, if I'm in a quarterback, like, he wasn't ready for it. You know, like, he doesn't want that. He wants to collect that paycheck and go home you know, not even putting this, the helmet on. The Washington Redskins are a good enough team to win the NFC East if Romo and Dez don't get back in time. What it boils down to is the coach playing to his team's strength, not a coach force-feeding an offense to a team that can't run it.
If you recall from last week, not that I said it, but I'm going to be honest with you, I thought it. The Washington Redskins only lost by 7 points to the Miami Dolphins, who were a team everybody has been saying, oh yeah, the Patriots better watch out. I'm thinking to myself at that point right then, and I'm watching some of the scores coming out of the NFC East, and I thought to myself at that point, I'm saying, you know something? The Washington Redskins could end up finding themselves somewhat near the top of this division. Nick, you are echoing exactly what I was thinking a week ago, and particularly in light of everything that we've seen now. Bryant down, Romo down. An Eagles team that doesn't seem to have a dimension to it at all. So we're not quite sure what's going on there.
And the Giants don't have anybody. They have Odell Beckham Jr. and Eli Manning. They don't have a second receiver. They don't have a running game. They have no offensive line, no defense.
Randall is their second receiver. He's not doing much, right? They let Preston Parker go, tight end. All he was doing was dropping balls. I agree. Yeah. They don't have a lot of offensive weapons over there. Their running game is suspect, the Giants. They're not terribly great on defense.
Mm-hmm. Horrible.
It's going to be an interesting NFC East year, for sure. This week probably will help at least round some of it out as we go. But I'll tell you what you got to do. Here's what you got to do. You need to be tuning in with us tomorrow night for our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. Number 211 coming to you tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern time right here. We'll be here with you for 2 hours. Uncle Mark and Sidekick and myself, and we'll be welcoming in Jeff Warner from Fox Sports 1470 up in Lehigh Valley will be coming to us to talk a little bit more about the Philadelphia Eagles. And then in around, about 7:45 or so, we're going to be joined by Dennis Kalatsos from WNST 1570 down in Baltimore to talk to us a little bit about the 2-0 Baltimore Ravens as well. Matt DeBias will be joining us later in the 8 o'clock hour to chit-chat a little bit about the NHL and the NBA. Well, if there's anything going on in the NBA. But I know we've got a bunch of stuff going on in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've got our picks of the week. That's the backbone of Frat House Sports right there, were the picks of the week. That's what started Frat House Sports. We got our picks of the week. We got 4 minutes of football. And we got a lot of other chit-chat that's on the agenda. Hey, St. Louis got some good news about a stadium today. Oh, that's going to be on the agenda. Concussions are back in the news. Oh, yeah. A lot of talk about concussions. Concussions in the NHL.
NHL now. Yep.
Yep. And yep. NFL, too. We're going to get into a little bit of that. Some quarterback rankings. And, my gosh, it appears the Colts might be in a meltdown. Yeah, that's what's on the agenda for tomorrow night. I was trying to get somebody from Indy to join us tomorrow night. I was trying to reach out to our good buddy Ken Sterling. We can get him with us, perhaps maybe as early as next week, to talk about what's going on with the Indianapolis Colts as they're melding down. Want to thank both you guys. Thank you very much for jumping in here tonight.
Good times.
And
good
filling
time.
In for
good job,
Brandon.
Nick,
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, yep. Nick.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on. And I know it was a little bit late. It was a great show, and I really enjoyed talking just some NFL, not fantasy, living in reality for a couple hours. You know, it was nice.
Yeah.
It is nice to talk real football every once in a while. It really is.
Is that what we're doing? We're living in reality? Uncle Mark, we living in reality? I'm not sure. Anyhow, I live in sports. I'm not sure. That's not reality. Anyhow, we appreciate everybody that's been listening in this evening. Listen, you know what you got to do? Hey, get out there and enjoy the football when it gets back and kicked off again tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Catch us right here tomorrow night, the Fred House Sports Show, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Catch you then.